This is the Bottom Line. I'm Doug Wells, and today we're speaking with Gabe Gunderson, founder and CEO of Hello Eats. Gabe is well known in the Utah tech scene. Along with several of his brothers and Clint Betts, Gabe was a driving force for Start SLC, a wildly successful celebration of and party for entrepreneurship. In addition, in 2008, Gabe and his brothers started iZenny, a Provo-based tech development shop that builds apps and websites for promising entrepreneurs. Gabe's new company, Hello Eats, is still in a little bit of stealth mode, but we do know that his company is building a management software system that simplifies the complexity of running a restaurant. We also know that the restaurant market is huge, but it's notoriously challenging. Join us this morning to hear more about Hello Eats' plans to help restaurant owners spend more time doing what they love, serving food to their customers, and spend less time on the complexities of running a small business. Gabe, thank you for joining us on The Bottom Line.
Thanks for having me.
So I mentioned you're in a little bit of stealth mode. I don't know, maybe that's not the right term for it. I went to your website. It's got a splash page there. There's a place you can sign up to learn more, but it doesn't talk a whole lot about what the vision is for the company. Are you in stealth mode, and is there a high level? What can you share with us about
it? So what is stealth mode? I guess we're trying to get out of stealth mode as quickly as we possibly can. So it's, you have limited resources. You want to spend those resources doing the things that are most helpful to your business. And for us, it was going right to product. That's where our background is, building product. And so that's kind of where we've been, heads down. We've got our stuff installed at several locations and are just barely starting to kick off the rough corners and edges. And as soon as we're ready, we don't want to be in stealth mode. We want to be launched, and that's where we're driving.
And what's the vision, high level, for like the feature set for the software?
Yeah, so as we've approached the problem and talked to restaurant owners, it's migrated a little bit from what the vision was originally. Ultimately, it will do a number of things that we've kind of had in our heads that it should do from the beginning. But right now, we're starting with providing a good experience for the consumer in ordering and making it easier and less expensive for the restaurant owner to take those orders. Specifically, we're talking about delivery, takeout, and select dine-in. It's the kind of thing that you might like imagine Grubhub or Seamless doing currently.
Why is there a need for something other than Grubhub?
So that's a great question. A couple things. One, running a restaurant is like notoriously hard. People say, well, it's so hard to sell into restaurants. And I say, hey, we can do that. If they can run a restaurant, we can sell into them. It's that much more difficult to keep the doors open at your establishment. It's a low margin business. They have labor costs that are difficult to manage. And McDonald's, recently came out and said, I don't know if you saw the article, but they're deploying automation in their ordering process throughout the nation, basically. And that's a response to higher wages. I'm for higher wages, but it's going to be very difficult for these businesses that aren't McDonald's to stay in business. So we want to offer world-class tools to restaurants that don't otherwise have access to it, again, so that they can focus on doing what they love. And that is, preparing great food for their customers.
So I think there's a huge need there, as you've identified. It's also historically a very tough space. For every Grubhub, there's at least 100, if not 1,000 companies that have tangentially gone after that space and struggled. You have a unique position from your background at iZenny helping entrepreneurs. What are you doing to mitigate the risk associated with
that? Yeah, so that's a great question, and it's something that we think a lot about. We believe genuinely that we've got something that's different for the market. If you're an owner of a restaurant and Grubhub comes into your establishment and says, look, we're going to make this convenient for you to take orders, you're going to reach a new demographic, you're going to get... And that's all great and dandy, but they take 20% in a lot of cases. Some of them take up to 25%. And you have to offer a lot of value in order to take that 25% off the top. These restaurants are very, some of them love it. If you're in San Francisco, if you're in New York, great. People will pay that much. You know, it leads to price inflation. And the consumers there will absorb it. And they won't in Salt Lake for the most part. And they won't in Provo. And they won't in all the other flyover states. And so where we think we're effective at getting into and opening up the market is having a payments-based offering. So we say to the consumer, this costs you nothing to use. And we say to the restaurant, this costs you nothing to use. But we have to take the credit card payment. And it's a very low margin opportunity. But if you do it at scale, it's tremendous. And in fact, that's part of what makes it exciting is all of a sudden these restaurants who wouldn't participate in a Grubhub marketplace will participate in a Hello Eats marketplace because there's no reason they wouldn't, right? And so as a user, you pop open that app and now all of a sudden there are name brand restaurants that you recognize that wouldn't be available. There's your favorite Ma and Pa's where, you know, Grubhub or one of these others, Grubhub should pay us for this advertising. What I'm saying is, you know, any number of apps, you open them up in here in Salt Lake and there's only a small smattering of restaurants that you can dine from. And I believe when we launch in Provo, we're going to have 100 restaurants. That's the difference. So and you win the marketplace and there'll be opportunities to sell to the restaurants additional restaurant management tools that aren't so low margin.
So you're a platform.
Absolutely.
Right. And platforms are hard because you've got to work on both the supply side as well as the demand, the consumer side. How do you think about capturing enough of the market on both ends?
Yeah, it's tricky. For us, it's about supply above all else. If we get that user to open the app and there's nothing in there, we've failed. But the way we've structured it literally costs nothing for the restaurant to start. It costs nothing out of pocket for the hardware. There is a small fee, but we take that out of the initial few orderings, and it's only like $70. And again, no monthly fee and just the credit card charge. So there's no reason why they should say no. And ordering really is super convenient. And we think we've also identified a few ways to make it so convenient that they actually will prefer in-house dining to use the app in some cases, right? You're not going to go to a nice restaurant and pull out your app. But if you're in a hurry and you stop by a shawarma joint, you might order before you get out of the car and they call your number, you know, by the time you've entered. And so
I've done that many times myself.
Yeah. There's recently an article called, I think the name was, "For the Love of God, Stop Using Seamless." And it's this restaurant owner in New York City who's basically says Seamless is great and everything, but it's a little bit like the mob. You know, we have no choice but to use this, and they're going to exact their 20% from every purchase.
It is interesting that a company like that can thrive really by extracting what I would consider to be a very exorbitant fee for what they do.
Look, most restaurant owners consider these their customers who are already coming through the door to buy their food, which they lovingly prepared. And for somebody to get in the way in a very heavy-handed way doesn't sit well. And so what they do is they'll take the order. They'll take it on any platform, and they put in the bag when they send the order out a note saying, look, if you care about this local business, if you want to support us, call us. You know, get on our website, order any other way but this. And so they try to evangelize them to, you know, to use these other methods that don't cost
the
restaurant.
It's a good reminder to all of us. If you're just joining us this morning, our guest today is Gabe Gunderson. He's the founder and CEO of Hello Eats. So we're talking about making a tool that works for all three parties. It works for the restaurant, it works for the consumer, and it makes sense for you as a business. If I understand your model right, it's your revenue is going to come from the processing of the payment.
Initially.
Much like for people that are a little bit, you don't have to be that tech savvy to know what Stripe is.
Right. Or Square is a popular one.
Square would be a better example.
So what we say is, you know, Square has a great offering and it's basically a convenience offering. It's easy to get access to the payment network, and it's easy to transact physically with their card reader, which at one point was super novel, but they don't offer a ton of value to the restaurant owner above and beyond what they offer to, for example, a towing company or a bicycle repair shop. So for us, it's all about understanding the users, their tastes, their preferences, understanding the menu better than the restaurant understands it, and having large amounts of data that go across restaurants. The thing is, you know, McDonald's may get you to download an app, but I'm not going to download an app for my favorite restaurants, El Gallo in Provo or Saigon Cafe, and nobody's going to download those. So as soon as the restaurants accept that they need to belong in an app with a larger marketplace and these and be joined up with users where they have the payment information and their taste profiles, then at that point it makes sense to start transacting in that way.
So a lot of times entrepreneurs go out and they try to start something on their own. You've been working for a number of years. iZenny's a successful company. You played a role in building that. So in your case, you have the luxury of starting with a team. You've got Luke Graybill as your chief technology officer. You've also got your brother, who's another Luke, Luke Gunderson.
Yeah, that's right. There are too many Lukes already.
So as you were thinking through what skill set do you want on your team, what kind of initial team do you want at Hello Eats? What were you thinking that should be?
So I probably made a mistake in putting too much emphasis on the product. Having a very product-centric worldview, creating products for other startups. And I realized that particularly in a fintech opportunity, a lot of it is about the relationships with banks and payment providers. And we kind of put the product on hold for a little while we explored, you know, what it meant to work on the acquisition side of the credit card processing. And the product, frankly, changed quite a bit from the early product that we'd built inside of iZenny before we were ejected. I say ejected, that's kind of a strong word. It was super, it was a great departure. And we owe a lot of what we've got going on to Jordan and iZenny. So, but yeah, and that's why we took, I said, hey, when I leave, can I have, you know, the original iZenny employee who had been with us for 8 years as a technical co-founder? And Jordan graciously said yes. And so, again, we probably overemphasized product. We know we can bang it out of the park there. Some of our challenges that we've overcome were around payments, and the challenges that we're going to overcome will be around establishing a marketplace.
And not only is the restaurant industry hard, but platform businesses are really hard. They're also
super exciting.
Yeah, they're also super exciting when you get it right. But it is a challenge because of needing both the supply and the demand side. And you know, the strategy has been figured out. Back in the day, people would wonder, well, gee, do you need customers or do you need supply? That strategy has been figured out, and it's without a doubt exactly what you said, supply. You need to focus on supply. But the payment industry is also one that's been fraught with a lot of challenges because you're essentially making a very tiny transaction fee, and it's really about volume and getting big quickly. How do you think about those challenges and surviving until you have 10 million transactions taking place?
So frankly, I'm excited about it. I'm excited because as we've talked to established players and they've kind of scoffed at what we're doing, I love it because it reassures me that once we establish ourselves, they're not going to be able to respond. The real competition we have has not yet launched. Look, if in Provo, Utah, I can't open an app and make an order my food at these restaurants, then the problem hasn't been solved. I frankly believe that the difficulty of creating this marketplace necessitates like that you have to take a payments approach. You have to be willing to put it all out there.
You have to do something different.
Yeah.
Because the Grubhub model's been done, and there's a winner in that model.
And people want to compare us to Grubhub, but I think, no, we're more like far more like Square. And we're like other companies that are just being founded today and tomorrow.
So how about you were the chief technology officer at iZenny, and you've chosen not to be the CTO. You've got one of the Lukes handling that for you. Is that hard? Is your heart in technology, or are you really looking forward to playing a management, a leadership role?
So I think I have what it takes to be a founder, and I think I have what it takes to build something and to rally the troops, but I don't think I'm the CEO who takes the company public. I'm willing to concede when the time is right, you know, that role. And yet I don't feel like I needed to be CTO. I was a technical founder is good enough for me. And frankly, it's nice to have those technical tendencies, but I find that it's easy also when you're having a hard day to kind of slip into this technical realm where you can control all the bits and make them obey and kind of avoid the more difficult things of human beings and marketplaces and financial realities.
The world's a complex place, and that's one of the things that's therapeutic about coding is the computer is not complex. The computer is black and white.
It obeys.
If it's not working, you've done something, you know, against its policies.
Yeah, that's
where the world, you can, you know, have a great app or you can have a great team, and there's lots of complexities above that, which sounds like something that you're excited about tackling.
Yeah, we're super excited about where we're at. Again, we've been able to keep our burn pretty low. We've been able to self-finance all the way up to where we're at. We've got restaurants with hardware installed and the app running, and we're just testing it out and seeing, you know, what it's going to take to release it. So we're pretty excited.
Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more with Gabe Gunderson. He's the founder and CEO of Hello Eats. Welcome back to The Bottom Line on KCPW. I'm Doug Wells. Today we're speaking with Gabe Gunderson, founder and CEO of Hello Eats. So how long have you been working on your company?
So I just got a notification from Namecheap that we needed to renew our domain.
12 months.
For the Project Betty, which was what it was called inside of iZenny. So yeah, it's been 12 months. We've officially been, you know, I handed in my keys and my parking pass at iZenny probably June. So we've been full-time, four of us since that time.
And what's been the most enjoyable part of the journey today, and what's been some of the more frustrating parts?
So the most enjoyable thing is the creative process. There's nothing that replaces it. There's nothing that can substitute for the rush that you feel when you think, hey, we're making something that's going to change the way people behave, you know, across the United States and several times throughout the day. That's exciting. The difficulty, learning that you don't know everything you thought you knew, you know, being humbled by people's responses that were different than you thought they might be, having to make payroll come hell or high water is always challenging. And I don't love that it puts a burden on my spouse, who is super supportive and has an infinite amount of patience with me. And yet it troubles me sometimes when I see her put in a position of stress so that I can pursue something I love.
Yeah, it's so important. If you're going to go an entrepreneurial route, that you have a spouse that's fully supportive, because it's such a tough journey for you as the entrepreneur, but also for your entire family and those around you.
But they get it. They're all excited about it. My my younger children even, you know, talk about, you know, how's it going and how's the app looking. And so it's fun. It's something as a family, they're not strangers to entrepreneurship.
Well, it's going to be a great feeling when you can open that app and then you've got a bunch of Provo restaurants in there and your family can use it as well.
Yep.
So we'll have you back when Hello Eats is launched and you've, you know, been in operation 6 or 12 months. But I wanted to get that background, and we look forward to an update on that in the future. I want to talk to you, if we can, about Start SLC. iZenny was the primary sponsor, was the primary driving force for that. There was an unknown person here in Utah, Clint Betts, that was really leading that for the organization. Clint's background was journalism. iZenny hired him. I think one of his roles was to get the word out about iZenny and let the entrepreneurial community know about the work you were doing in Provo, building these tech applications for entrepreneurs. What was the vision for Start SLC?
I don't know. I don't know if I'm, like, I wasn't the guy with the vision for that. I think Clint and Stephen Walter and some of the other people who are working together on that, I feel like, particularly with Start SLC, we were the fuel. We were the support. We were the infrastructure. And we just trusted that they would build something that was fun and exciting and great and worthwhile. And as, you know, entrepreneurs, it's easy to believe that something great will come from your efforts. And I think something did in this case.
Yeah, I would say something order of magnitude greater than. It was really a special moment. And in many ways, to me, it was an inflection point for the spirit of the entrepreneurial ecosystem.
I believe that's true, although that had probably more to do with timing than who happened to be organizing at the moment. There had been a lot of groundwork that had been laid. And I think, you know, maybe it was astute of us to see that this was coming and it was the time, or maybe it was just dumb luck. But, you know, I'm grateful that we were there and willing to put in the effort and that the community was ready to receive it. And it was a great event and I think start of something great.
Yeah. Well, in hindsight, it was a big gift to the ecosystem here. And iZenny played a big role in making that possible. So thank you for having the faith that it could be something great and exciting, because it was. And I think the next one's January 20th or right around there.
Yeah.
It's coming up here soon.
Start SLC is the spiritual ancestor, they say, of Start Fest, which is the new name that, I guess, maybe if you're going to take it to Provo for 1 year, you have to change the name away from Start SLC. I don't know. But yeah, the beginning of the year, they'll have a pretty big to-do. And this time, it's not a humble dev shop named iZenny that's backing it.
You guys have spun that out, right? I mean,
we've spun it out. Just as I talk here, I'm not sure how much of this is public and when this will air. But let's just say that there are very well-financed corporations that are going to be backing it this time around.
Yeah, which is awesome. Because it's great to see it become an entity on its own, because it's important.
And it was a significant burden for iZenny, and it did have or bring a fair share of hardship along with it. So yes, we're happy to see it successful, and we're also happy to have that burden lifted.
So you're working with your brother at Hello Eats now. You worked with several of your brothers at iZenny. If I'm correct in my research, in the firm you and Luke were at prior to that, you guys were at the same firm prior to iZenny as well. Was that a family business also?
So my dad, being an entrepreneur, I mean, we've worked with him several times throughout our younger years. But Luke had a different path. He joined iZenny probably five or six years after Jordan and I founded it. Jordan and I did work together for my dad's business years and years ago.
I was going to ask if, you know, just I was struck by the brothers in your business and the fact you had been together in a separate business, and now your new business, you have your brother. I was going to ask if your father was an entrepreneur. Yeah. What did your father do? Or what does he do if
so,
he's still doing it?
I was fairly young, but he built pools in the Chicagoland area. Those are my early memories. And he actually came out to Utah when Seven Peaks was being built.
Those are some big pools at Seven Peaks.
And I think that did him in. He said no more. And so he does some importing of gifts and souvenirs. And at this point, he's largely retired.
Okay. And what are a couple of entrepreneurial traits you learned from your dad?
So my dad is easily the hardest working person I know. And I think there are a lot of things you can learn from books and a lot of smart people do. But I've just learned that you put your head down and you work and you show up when other people aren't willing to. And you continue working and you continue working. And finally, it's going to crack and you'll find the success that you want. I have to believe that's true. Otherwise, I'm completely mad.
And now you're at least a third of the way through your own personal entrepreneurial journey.
I would say two-thirds.
It's a tough journey. And like building pools, you probably don't do entrepreneurship in your 70s, although some people do. We were talking about McDonald's, Ray Kroc being an excellent example. But all right, you're two-thirds of the way through. You've got a young family at home. Your kids are watching. What do you hope they learn about entrepreneurship from Dad?
Well, what I hope they don't learn is that it has to come at a great cost. I worry about the time I spend away from the home and my children, who are the most important thing to me, my family. But at the same time, I have to believe that they're also learning that through hard work and determination, that you can accomplish things, big things, hard things, things that a lot of people would shy away from. And that, you know, you only get so many cracks at this in life, and you should take some of those swings.
It's a good advice, and it's a great note for us to wrap up on. We wish you all the best with Hello Eats. We look forward to following it when it launches and goes public. And thank you for sharing your story with us today on The Bottom Line.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Our guest this morning has been Gabe Gunderson, founder and CEO of Hello Eats. Today's show was recorded at the KCPW studios on Library Square and produced by Ross Chambliss. You can hear our entire interview with Gabe on our website, kcpw.org. I'm Doug Wells. Join us next week on The Bottom Line.